Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. We have a great lineup today. I hope you'll stick around for the whole show. My first guest joining me is Patrick Renwazi. He's been with us many times before, and he always does a great job in bringing us great ideas. And today we're going to talk about Zoom meetings and how you can show up brilliantly in those meetings. So let's get right to it. Patrick, I'm bringing you on. Thanks so much for joining me once again today.
Yes, good morning, Bill.
How are you today?
Well, I've been locked up in my place for about 2.5 months. Big part of my business is traveling, because I go around the world and I teach people new concepts about how the brain of the customers work. But since we haven't been able to travel for 2.5 months, that gave me a lot of time to think about things. And the new project that I'm working on is taking all the knowledge that I have on the science of human persuasion and making it relevant in the virtual world. So this is what I'm doing today.
Yes, I've been looking forward to your viewpoints on that. I've been reading a lot about how, you know, we're all, if you didn't do a Zoom meeting before COVID-19, you've probably done many of them since. And how these virtual communication tools show up in our brain. I've read, and maybe you can validate this, that our brain is always trying to match things up, to align things, and it becomes very difficult when, for instance, someone has a lag in their video and their lips move. It's kind of like an old B movie where the lips are moving but the words aren't coming out in the same timing, and it's really distracting for the brain. And so a lot of people are wondering, you know, would I be better off, should I make sales presentations on Zoom, and should I communicate on Zoom, or am I better off with the telephone? What am I going to do,
right,
especially
on.
If
I mean,
I'm stuck for a while? So let's talk about that.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Exactly, and that's the problem with Zoom. And as you probably have noticed, I mean, most people really hate Zoom. I mean, a lot of people are commenting today that it's painful to be on Zoom. They drop their attention very quickly after just a few minutes. And the problem, the technical problem, is exactly what you've said. In other words, the human brain is not used to seeing a delay between the audio and the video. And there is some research that has proven that although, you know, a platform like Zoom's bringing in the additional information of the visual of the person that's talking, because of that lag, it's actually less effective than a full conversation. Now, there are always, you know, exceptions, but for a big part of it, some people would be better off just talking to the customers on the phone as opposed to being on Zoom. Now, the benefit of Zoom, of course, is you can bring in visuals, and visuals, we know, have a very, very strong impact on the brain, and especially, you know, the part of the brain that drives the decision-making process, which we call the primal brain, which Daniel Kahneman, the winner of the 2002 Economy Nobel Prize, called System 1. So the problem is, when we look at somebody on Zoom, first of all, there is a delay between what we see and what we hear. And even if that delay is barely perceptible, I mean, it can be less than 1/10 of a second for our brain to generate a signal that something is not normal. And because of that, one of the issues with Zoom is that it drops the human attention very, very quickly. You know, in one of your previous shows, I was talking about a phenomenon called the recency primacy effect. Here is what's happening. When you, like, imagine you're with your customer for an hour on the phone. We know that the brain is more awake, it's more attentive at the beginning of an interaction. It's called the primacy effect. And at the end of an interaction, it's called the recency effect. In other words, we tend to remember things at the beginning and remember things at the end. So what does that mean? Well, if you're with a customer on the phone for an hour, it means your first 2 minutes are super important. Your last 2 minutes are also super important. And pretty much what you're going to say in the middle is not going to have that much importance. In fact, you know, George Lucas, a famous movie maker, said, the secret to making a good movie is create a hot opening, create a hot close, and just don't screw up in the middle. So we know that the beginning and the end of an interaction are very important, and then the curve drops in between. Now, the problem with a platform like Zoom is that your attention in the middle is going to drop much, much faster than if the person you're interacting with is in the same room as you. And it has to do with, again, our primal brain, which says, if I am talking to a person and we are face to face, there is a possibility that that person will go nuts and they will try to kill me. So I have to stay attentive to what they say. I'm going to read your facial expressions. I'm going to pay attention to the small changes in your voice. Now, the problem with a platform like Zoom is that most people have a very, very bad microphone. So if you have a bad microphone, these little changes in your tones of voice, which again are not perceptible at the conscious level, are going to be lost. And then your attention is going to drop after 2 minutes. And the problem is that when people are on a platform like Zoom, you're competing for their attention. And their attention might be drawn to their phone messages, their emails, their pet that's, you know, moving in the back of their home office. So all this creates a complete lack of attention of the audience. And as you know, most people, when they're on the Zoom conference, they are doing three other things at the same time. So the problem is you're competing to get the attention of your customers, and their attention is going to drop very, very quickly when you're doing this remotely. So the problem is a little bit like PowerPoint. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of people do not like PowerPoint, right? Very few people use PowerPoint properly, but on Zoom, the difference is even greater because Zoom is a new platform, so not a lot of people know what they should do on Zoom to properly capture the attention of their audience.
So, Patrick, you've through SalesBrain, you've trained over 200,000 executives how to be more persuasive. Your book, The Persuasion Code, lays it all out for people. But one of the, you know, how do our listeners use what you just said to bring people back in? How do you create peaks throughout the presentation so it's not just a big U shape, but it's a lot of W's?
Right. So there are some communication roles that are absolutely unique to a platform like Zoom and that people need to apply. So a lot of the recommendations I'm going to give you now, they're very tactical. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not really, I mean, it's based on brain science, but everybody will go, oh, yeah, maybe I should have done it. So I'm going to give you first the tactical issues, and then we're going to go back more to some of the basic principles of persuasion. So I'm going to start by the bad stuff, and then we're going to talk about the good stuff later. But I think that for most people, they have to recognize that if they are using Zoom, most likely, even if they do the best possible job, right, they will only be able to get about 20% of the attention retention of their audience. It's the nature of the platform and the limitation that you have, and they need to be aware that sometimes trying to do it on Zoom will give them less attention than if they were going to be doing it just on the regular phone line. So the tactical issues are this. You really need to pack the important stuff at the beginning of your presentation, and you need to pack the good stuff at the end. And that good stuff, in our jargon, we call that a grabber. You have to grab the attention of your audience in the first few minutes so they go, oh, wow, what this guy is telling me is so passionate, you know, it's so important for me, it could really change my life, that I'm going to need to spend a humongous amount of focus to listen to that guy. In other words, even if I'm not that passionate about the subject that the guy is bringing, in other words, I'm not going to have the emotional cocktail that is used for a lot of people to pay attention to something, right? Even if they don't have that, then they're going to force their attention. And if they have an email that's coming up in their mailbox, they're going to deliberately ignore that email so that they can keep their attention on the message that's being displayed. So that's the first thing. You need to pack your message at the beginning with something really juicy, and you need to give something also irresistible at the end. The second thing is, as we all know, visuals are critical, right? And when you see a PowerPoint presentation with a lot of text, immediately everybody starts yawning. Well, what does that mean in the world of Zoom? It means you need to really eliminate a lot of the text on your slide. You need to keep a small number of slides, but the visual metaphors that you communicate in those slides need to really translate possibly complex concepts about your value prop, but that will allow your audience to understand them in 1/10 of a second. So forget the text. You need to really bring strong visuals in your presentations. Okay. Another aspect of it is, because the attention retention of your audience is going to drop very quickly, you need to take real breaks. In other words, if your Zoom session lasts 45 minutes, I would recommend to take at least one break in the in the middle of it after 20 minutes and say to people, well, I know it's hard for you to maintain your attention as we're talking now, so I would like to suggest that we take a short break. And you invite people to leave their office, to leave their seat, to leave their, they need to stand up, they need to reoxygen their bodies and their minds, so they need to move. Because one of the problems is, if you're sitting in front of a Zoom session and you're not moving for 45 minutes, again, you're signaling your body and you're signaling your brain that nothing is jeopardizing your survival. So you can go into a mode of conservation of energy where you can relax. In other words, it's almost like you're falling asleep. So you have to break the rules with Zoom, and you have to say, and you have to set that up as a rule at the beginning with your customer. You have to say, well, I'm really thankful that you're willing to give me 40 minutes of your time today, but let's establish some rules of communication. Because your time is important, I'm going to give you 100% of my attention in the next 40 minutes. I would like you to reciprocate, so please, don't check your email, don't listen to your phone, don't play with your pet. Second rule is, we're going to take a break in 20 minutes. We're going to take a 3-minute break, and everybody can move and use the bathroom or get a cup of tea. So by setting the rules at the very beginning, you let people know that whatever you're going to be presenting is important and that they will have to take a break. By the way, if your Zoom session lasts more than an hour, I would recommend that in the middle you take a real break, not a 2-minute break, but that you take a 10-minute break and you ask people to get outside, take a quick walk, or do something else. Maybe you're going to tell them, well, at that moment, it might be a good time for you to check your emails or your text messages, but you need to take a longer break in that particular case. So again, a few recommendations. One, set up the rules early about breaks and about attention. Two, make sure you put the juicy stuff at the beginning and at the end. Three, use real visuals, not just, text. Pictures of somebody smiling in an office when they're on the phone. No, you need to find a visual metaphor for your value prop, and you need to create powerful visuals. So that's point number three. Number four, make sure that your face is lit. I know a lot of people, they have dim offices. So what happens is your audience cannot read your facial expressions. So make sure that the light in your office is coming from in front of you, and make sure that your camera is right in front of you. Make sure that your microphone is good. Make sure that your internet connection is good so that the delay between the audio and the video is as little as possible. So these are my early recommendation. Again, I'm still in the thick of doing the research on this, but this is what I have found so far.
That's terrific. Great tips. Now, if you're in a situation where you're making a sales presentation to someone, and how important is it for you to ask a question every few minutes? And what's the ideal length of time before you shift the attention back over to your potential customer?
Sure. So as we discussed, the curve of attention retention will drop faster on Zoom than if you're meeting that person face-to-face. So what happens is you need to create change. You need to create contrast. You need to create small events in your Zoom session, which is going to re-engage the customer. So there are several techniques. As you said, asking your customers to talk, asking them a question, creates that disruption. So this is very good. Another technique, for example, would be to use a prop. In other words, if you want to illustrate one particular point that you're making in your discussion, make sure that you use an object and then wave that object in front of the camera. The question that you ask can be a real question that will help diagnose their pain. As you know, it's one of the four steps in our process. So going back to the not tactical issues of dealing with Zoom, but the more strategic issues of dealing with Zoom is you would need to follow the four step that we recommend in our model, which is you need to diagnose the pain. And the diagnostic of the pain, as you suggest, is about asking questions. Then the second step in our process would be to make sure that you differentiate your claims. In other words, that throughout your discussion with your customer, they know and they understand what is unique about you. And we call that the claims, right? And then if you're in a selling situation, you need to do the step three in our process, which is that you need to demonstrate the gain. So Bill, I don't know if you remember, but in our model, we talk about pain, claim, and gain. The pain is when the seller asks his own prospect questions. And of course, Zoom would be very effective to do that. In other words, if your customer is willing to answer your questions, then you're really starting a dialogue. Now, that dialogue hopefully should be not about you, the seller, but should be about them. You, the seller, it's about them, the buyers, right? So the minute people start talking on Zoom, they know it's all about them. So you get 100% of their attention if you ask them questions and they have to start thinking about giving you an interesting answer, right? So asking a question is an indirect or tactical way of re-engaging the attention of your audience. As I said, using a prop is another one. Another one that you can do is just stand up. So even, you know, if I'm presenting right now and people only see my face on the camera on the small vignette on Zoom, then if I stand up and I make sure that my body still can be seen in the camera, viewpoint, then they are going, why is he standing up? So again, it's almost an artificial way of forcing the attention of your audience.
That's excellent. Excellent. So, we've only got a couple more minutes left. Tell us a little bit more about your book, The Persuasion Code, and any new work that you're working on, please.
So the new work that I'm working on right now is, again, how do you apply these rules of persuasion to the world of online? Well, as you know, we don't really know what's going to happen with this epidemic. And a lot of people are saying the world is going to go virtual. And a lot of people realize that, yes, they can do a good job at working remotely, but the effectiveness of remote selling has not been proven. In fact, you know, I'm having a discussion with a lot of experts these days on the subject, and we are pretty pessimistic about the effectiveness of Zoom for selling, because it's all the issue of, you know, can you really persuade people when you're not in the same room as they are? And I'm trying to find some research that would give an actual percentage of how less effective Zoom is compared to a face-to-face meeting with people. So I found a lot of research paper that talk about the effectiveness of remote teams, et cetera, and the percentages is not good. In other words, it is very, very difficult to influence or persuade people when you do that either just on the phone or just using Zoom. And I mean, of course, it depends on what you sell. You know, maybe if you're selling insurance, you're going to have a certain level of effectiveness, but if you're selling something very complicated, it's going to be a lot harder. In fact, now imagine just trying to recruit somebody, right? I mean, you could do all the recruitment on the phone, but for most people, we want to get that face-to-face meeting because, amazingly enough, when you're in the same room as the person, your primal brain, your unconscious brain, really gets a lot more information about that person. I mean, an interesting one is smell. You know, people don't realize it, but smell is one of the most important stimulus that your brain receives. And if somebody doesn't smell good, just like a house, you know, if you go to buy a house and the house smells like mold, even if you're not aware that you've smelled mold, then you might say later, no, I'm not going to buy that house. You didn't know why you didn't like the house, but because somehow, somewhere, there was a very little smell of mold in that house, and that told your brain that you could not buy it. So again, the difficulty is, I mean, this is the message that I have right now. I have two people. Lower your expectations when it comes to believing how much persuasion you can achieve on Zoom, because the research shows that sometimes Zoom is less effective than the phone.
Very interesting. Patrick, it's always great to have you back on the show. The website is salesbrain.com. Again, the prior book was called The Persuasion Code, and check into SalesBrain. It's a great website, and you always bring our listeners terrific information. So again, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you, Bill. And just one last word. You know, I just released a course on LinkedIn. So anybody who has LinkedIn Premium has access to a free 47-minute LinkedIn course on the science of persuasion. People that are not LinkedIn Premium, they can email me and I will send them a link that give them free access for 24 hours. And right now, actually, what I'm working on is I'm working with LinkedIn to bring more of those courses, because the first course that I released less than 3 months ago has already gotten about 12,000 views. So it's getting a lot of traction. People get interested in the science of human persuasion based on, you know, how the brain works. And, you know, of course, right now, the main topic for a lot of people is how can I persuade on the phone or using Zoom?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a big topic. Thank you so much once again, Patrick. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Bill. Good luck to you, too.
And thank you, listeners. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today. It's really a pleasure to have you with us. My next guest has been called the expert's expert. David C. Baker is the leading authority on positioning, reinventing, and selling firms in the creative and digital space. Really looking forward to talking with him. David, thank you so much for joining me once again today, or for the first time today, I should say. Excuse me. Been a long day. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've been looking forward to being on your show. Thank you for having me.
That's totally my pleasure. Really great to have you on. Now, we're in some interesting times here. I'm sure people are calling you a lot and wondering, you know, what can we do? I've been looking at your website, some of the things that you talk about, areas that you help. If one of them is interesting, if you'd rather do what works instead of reinventing the flat tire. Man, I have a lot of flat tires in my garage, ideas that I've tried, things that just didn't work out. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and what you do to help folks.
Yeah, I guess if I were a dog, I'd be called a mutt, because I've come to where I am at the moment through a very strange circuitous route. Is that how you say that? I don't remember how to say that word. My parents were medical missionaries, and I was born in the U.S. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I didn't live here until I was 18. When I was just a little baby, we went overseas and lived in Costa Rica for a while they learned Spanish. And then we went and lived with a tribe of Mayan Indians in Guatemala. No roads, no electricity, no plumbing, no stores. So my first memories were of the U.S. were in when I was 18, 19, came to live here and entered formal school for the first time at that point. I went through all the typical formal schooling after that, went through grad school, a five-year grad school program, and wanted to head into teaching anthropology and language, and decided that I was kind of tired of the politics in the higher ed field. And just sitting on my couch one day looking at the ads in the local newspaper and thought to myself, surely I could do better than this. And very naively, obviously, decided to start a firm, and did that. That was in Northern Indiana, did it for 6 years, really enjoyed that work in marketing and advertising, public relations. But about 5 years into that, I was, just through a strange set of circumstances, began to give advice to other principals of firms in the marketing and digital and advertising space. And within about 6 months, it took over my life completely, spun the firm off. And so that's what I have been doing since, for the last 25, 26 years. So what I do now is advise principals. I don't help them with the craft itself. There's plenty of help for that, and I'm not better at it than they are. I try to help them make better business decisions. So I've had the opportunity now to work with 900 of those firms in 30 countries around the world. And every week I'm inside peering at a new firm that believes that the struggles are all new when in fact they typically aren't new, even though they've combined their own issues in a unique form of dysfunction, so to speak, which kind of keeps me in business. So I'm an author, speaker, and advisor. Been doing that for about 26 years and really love what I do.
It's very interesting. With your back, your very unique background, it seems like business owners really appreciate someone who can give them a fresh perspective. And these days, a lot of businesses are having to take a whole new look at how they've been doing business up until the first quarter of this year. Of course, they were probably doing pretty well with their business. Most businesses were. And all of a sudden, bam, we've got this huge need for change and innovation. How are business owners reacting to this COVID-19 virus, and what are their biggest, what do you think their biggest needs are to plan for this uncertain future?
Yeah, it's so odd to have to answer that honestly, because what firms like that are facing doesn't vary too much by geography. In other words, a firm in France or Canada or Australia or the US, they're facing about the same thing. But in each of these countries, the range of experience is very wide. So you have a few firms that are holding their own and maybe even experiencing some slight ramp up in revenue. That's very clearly the vast minority of these firms. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you have some firms who have lost 80% of their revenue, and the typical firm is right somewhere in the middle. They've lost 20 to 30%. In any given year, a private, independently owned firm, like the ones I serve, we would lose about 15% of those firms in a year. Some would be very innocuous reasons, like somebody retired or they merged with another firm, but most because, you know, it was forced on them. They went out of business in some way. I'm predicting now, based on the data that I'm seeing, that about 30%, so double that, will happen. What's unique about our industry, though, is that by our industry, I mean the marketing and digital and advertising space, is that we have always been a lagging indicator. So when you look out and you see what's happening in businesses in general, it's much worse than what's hit this field that I serve. But the other shoe is going to drop. And so not only are these business owners facing the challenge of trying to do all this work from home rather than in a central location, they also don't know how they're going to keep staff. Now, in some countries, there's been some government help, but all that's done is really just defer the really tough decisions. And so that's all bad news, right? The good news is that this is forcing fantastic thinking around business model innovation. And that's really where I'm focusing with clients. And it is really exciting to see how some of these firms are actually going to thrive even more than they were before, partly because they've done a great job thinking, but partly because there's going to be a leveling of the competition, and only, you know, some of the weakest kids are going to get thrown off the playground.
Yes, there are certainly opportunities available for growth by acquisition, as many, especially baby boomer types of owners, are saying, you know, I just don't want to pull the sled up the hill one more time. If this is a long recession, I think a lot of them were done probably in the 2008-2009 time frame, and they pulled the sled up the hill. That's what I call it. And they get up again, in the last few years, it looked like things were great. Maybe I can sell my business now, and here we go again. So are you counseling your clients that, you know, don't look at it as a problem, look at it as a huge opportunity, because this is very different than a normal recessionary time frame, right? This was created quickly and may have a hopefully a quick recovery.
Yes, I am encouraging them to, well, I'm asking all of them to rethink how much they enjoy this field and whether they want to do the hard work to get through this and be even stronger on the other side. And the firms that have always been taking the long view rather than the short view, they're not doing anything different than they would normally do, except that they're conserving cash and they're making very quick decisions about lowering their staff costs by dismissals or furloughs. But otherwise, they're still doing all the normal things. The folks who haven't been doing the right things all along, they're panicking because it's not really a great time to go out and put a new positioning in place or a new lead generation plan in place. It's hard to know. I'm not an economist. I'm certainly not a medical professional. But if you think back to 2008 and 9, when we lost all of those jobs, I'm speaking just to the U.S. market at the moment, we didn't replace those jobs until 2014. It took 6 years to rebuild that marketplace before we even went beyond it to grow. This will probably be significantly worse than that. It's hard to know. I have no doubt that we'll rebound and be an even stronger economy than we ever have been, but how long that takes is really anybody's guess. And it's going to be very, very painful. Only the strongest business owners will thrive through this.
Yeah, that's what we're reading, because I guess when you think about it, you have to have enough cash to get through what might be a difficult time, and then you have to have cash to restart, assuming we get a tremendous amount of volume coming in. Now, in the creative space, it would seem like, I don't know, this is an area that I don't have a lot of expertise in, so I want to ask you, it seems like everybody needed new advertising, but it may or may not have been real creative. There's kind of like a stock, hey, we're all in this together kind of commercial going on in the creative space there, or advertising.
Right.
But when it comes back, when it starts to come back, at that point, will new and innovative campaigns come into play? And will this new familiarization with video change the game at all? You know, a lot of people that weren't on Zoom before have been on a lot of Zooms now.
Yeah, there'll be some changes for sure, like working from home. Part of that will be permanent and so on. But I don't think human behavior changes this quickly or this shallowly. So I would say that a lot of what we're doing right now will absolutely be temporary. People will still be going to movies again. They'll be eating out again. They'll be watching regular sports again. So all of that will come back at some point. You made a note in passing about how you didn't use these words, but sort of uncreative the current marketing is. I just have to agree with that completely. I think it's based in the fact that brands, advertisers are so terrified of saying the right thing that they're just being lemming-like, and they're just saying, we're all in this together, our first concern is for you, and it's all a little bit nonsense. I think there's room for brands to stand out from the crowd right now more than ever before by being a little bit different, by weaving some humor in, maybe some self-deprecation. There's very little of that happening, and brands are missing the boat by playing it way too safe in an environment like this.
Yeah, that's my impression too. If you string three or four of those commercials together, it's good for the alcohol industry. It's time to go get a drink.
That's right.
And I've noticed, for instance, you know, whoever does Progressive Insurance's commercials, fantastic job at weaving back things together and creating humor. They always do such a great job. So tell us a little bit about your book, The Business of Expertise, How Entrepreneurial Experts Convert Insight to Impact and Wealth. How long did it take you to write the book? What's it all about? Why should our listeners go grab a copy?
Sure. Well, it took a lot longer than it should have. I'll say that. And that's because when I started to write it, I envisioned it as somewhat of a textbook about how to build and then position and then sell and then deliver expertise. And I was boring myself writing it. So I cut it way down to a much shorter book. I illustrated it, did it in color. And at the end of it, I was very, very proud of it. It's my fifth book. It's really a passionate manifesto arguing for the value of expertise and arguing very passionately that you should not be giving it away for free, that it's possible to be very effective in your work for clients and also make good money for yourself. Those are not antithetical. And it's an easy book to read. It's been the most popular of all the books I've written so far, so I'm very proud of it. My sixth book comes out shortly, but I've had to wait until all of this simmers down before I promote it. But they can find out more about that book at expertise.is, expertise.is.
Excellent, excellent. And what tips or precautions would you tell your clients? We always like to share, you know, two or three brief tips or ideas or precautions for our listeners. What would you tell people now about dealing with the issue of the days of these days?
Sure. I would say be really careful about debt. It's something that if you decide to undertake, it will lessen the pain, and the pain is what prompts you to make good decisions. So I'd be very careful about taking on debt. I would also make sure that you remain disciplined in working on your business and not in your business every day, as Michael Gerber says. And the final thing, and this relates a lot to expertise and positioning, is don't grab in some panic mode all the opportunity that comes your way. Keep being choosy about working with clients who are indeed a good fit for you and that you won't regret working with later. Continue to be choosy, even if it means you have to be even more ruthless in lowering your capacity so that it's always less than your opportunity. That's what I would say to your listeners.
And leave some toilet paper on the rack, right?
Right, unless somebody stole the roll before you got in, right.
The metaphor of the day. Well, this is very fascinating talking to you. When you're looking for a new client to take on, of course, they probably find you before you look for them. What's an ideal situation? What really is a situation where you would say, boy, I'm really glad this person called because I can really help this type of situation?
Yeah, frequently they've tried several things that have not worked, so there's some level of pain. There's something that's keeping them up at night. They are not afraid to spend money. They're not afraid of the truth, and they're courageous. That's one of the biggest things is courageous, because I don't really enjoy just giving advice that isn't taken. I'd like to be a part of real change with clients. So, I'm a big believer in letting prospects self-select themselves out of the running. I don't bug them. Like 39,000 people have signed up to get the weekly emails. I never contact them in a selling way. I just let them decide if it's a good fit to work together, and then we have one conversation, and either it's not a fit or it is. So it's just being confident in what you can do and not being afraid of running out of opportunity, I think. That's the advice I give my clients as well.
Well, it's very nice to talk with you, and I've been looking at your website as we've been talking, and found several very interesting articles, blogs, webinars, and, of course, the book, The Business of Expertise. The website is davidcbaker.com, and it's a tremendous amount of information there. I would really urge our listeners to take a look and get to understand the mind of David C. Baker. David, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Bill. I really appreciate you having me on.
And thank you, listeners, so much for joining me again today. It's been a real pleasure. I'm going to take a one-minute break. I'll be right back with my next guest.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.exitcoachradio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us today. Real pleasure to have you with us. My next speaker is Mickey Williams. She's a Hall of Fame speaker and TEDx speaker. She was chosen as one of the best speakers in the country by Meetings and Convention Magazine, along with Tony Robbins, Bill Gates, and Jay Leno. Based in Naples, Florida, she's an award-winning speaker for Vistage International, the world's leading executive organization, and she's a master chair of two of their peer advisory boards in Chicago. She's a global celebrity speaker, transformational storyteller, and noted in Forbes as one of the most sought-after executive speech coaches. And she's the creator of Speaker School, Keynote Camp, the Mickey Mouth Club, and her one-woman show, She Came, She Wore, She Conquered, performed at Second City Chicago. Mickey has spoken in every U.S. state, every Canadian province, and every continent except Antarctica, where she can't wear her stilettos. Please welcome Mickey Williams. Mickey, great to have you on the show once again.
Oh, Bill, great to be back. You have that voice I know and love.
thank you. Well, it's my pleasure. I've been doing a lot of work for Vistage Worldwide, moderating webinars and having a lot of fun with that, but ExitCoach Radio is where my heart is. It's a pleasure to have you back. Tell me, how have things been going in your world?
Actually, they've been wonderful. I've done the magic word. I've pivoted. And everything that I'm doing is virtual, and it's working out well. And I'm actually loving being home and not traveling and really loving the challenge. It's kind of reinvented everything. It reinvigorated me, Bill, honestly.
I know what you mean. I know that some people thrive on change because it creates new opportunities. And others are fearful. I mean, you work with a lot of business owners who may be saying, yeah, that's great, but I just can't pivot just like that. So it's a great time to be flexible and with your eye open for opportunities. What would you say your business owners are feeling in the Vistage Worldwide executive groups that you moderate?
Yeah, in my groups and some of the ones I've been speaking to, and I, you know, there's always outliers of in every kind of situation, but I would say more than a third are doing really well or finding opportunities now or can see clearly to the ones that will be coming. Another third are probably maintaining status quo and paying attention to what's going to happen. Because, you know, everything changes so much in this situation. And, you know, it's got to be less than a third, but there are those who are really hit hardest. I have two members, one in the travel industry, one in the events industry, both of which you can tell immediately are just very hard hit.
Right. So that magic word pivot. How does that fit in? What do you want to tell our listeners about the importance of being able to identify a lemonade from the lemons and pivoting to something in a new direction that might take you to new heights?
Yeah, I would say get together with your teams and have some creative brainstorming sessions, you know, just to tickle some of their minds. I have a gal in construction. And one of the things that came up was everybody's home and obviously noticing more than ever the paint that's peeling or the dripping faucet or the room that they hate. And what a great time to kind of pivot more to the remodeling side than the new construction side, at least to get that flow of income coming in before things start to normalize a little bit. So it's really looking at your business from the standpoint of what is today's situation done to magnify or open up an opportunity that maybe you wouldn't have concentrated on before, but seems so relevant now. And that's what I call pivoting.
Yeah, and that's great advice. And, you know, one of the economists, the major economist that Vistage Worldwide listens to, says, look, we're in a stage where it's not a great time to, you know, to spend a lot of money. It's a great time to be ready, be real conscious of when your business is starting to turn up by measuring a lot of economic data. And at that point, be super ready because it's going to take off at a certain point. And so for a lot of business owners now, how would you tell them to prepare for the new opportunities? So right now we can change, like you said, to remodeling. What happens when it starts to change back? Should they have a lot of dry powder ready to invest in the growth of their business? What would you say?
Well, you know, cash is always king, and never more so than now. But, you know, a lot of people are tired of reading and hearing about COVID, but this is not the time to tune out. This is the time to tune in, to be reading some of those articles and listening to some of those podcasts or shows like yours where you have some leaders on talking about what's happening in the business world, because I think that's where the brain ticklers are going to come from, or the ideas that are generated sometimes internally, but all of a sudden you hear something on the other side and you say, hey, that would apply to my business as well. You know, I have a couple of manufacturers who totally pivoted to what they had to or what they needed to. Well, yeah, I can make sanitizer, I can make masks, I can make this or that. So it's really, you know, I think never a time in history like this, Bill, where creativity, brainstorming, storytelling, which is my forte, have come into play than right now.
Agree. Yeah, this is, you know, the old, the age-old saying, now it's more like don't just do something, sit there and think about things and reimagine not only what the needs of your customers might be now, but what it will be as things come back. Now, on your website, which is fantastic, by the way, I love your website, there are a lot of images that come through. One of them is a magazine article that says how to pick your Yoda. Tell us about how to pick your Yoda. What does that mean, and how do people go about that?
Yeah, there's a guy, if you haven't had him on your show, you should, named Mike Maddox, who wrote a great book, and he does a lot in branding and marketing and positioning and customer experience and everything. I was very flattered to be one of the chapters in his book, and he writes for Ford Magazine as well. And so the focus of his article was about finding your Yoda. So he picked the top five people in his life that he felt had made the biggest difference. I was selected because I was his, you know, speech coach. And I think it's, to your point, if everyone stopped to think, who are my Yodas? Who are my mentors? Who are the people who can help me go forward? How do I embrace them or use them in ways that will benefit everybody as a 360? I think it's a great thing to stop and think about. You're always so good, Bill, about pinpointing and picking out those type of things that most people would miss. And I think that's what he meant when he talks about Yoda.
Yeah, I think it's a great metaphor. I mean, everybody can relate to it. And everybody, you know, it's your mentor or your someone that can help you become a thought leader, not just tell you what you know, but tell you something that you need to know. Let's talk for a second about your speaker school, Mickey, because I had a guest on earlier today, and he said he's kind of a brain scientist, if you will, and he said, you know, the problem with Zoom is people don't know how to communicate properly in this world of virtual presentations and virtual things. How would you counsel speakers today to change their technique to be effective on mediums like Zoom and other virtual presentations?
That's so interesting, Bill, because I've incorporated that now into my regular speeches as well into speaker school as a whole separate area. I think it happened for me when I started watching some speakers come to my Vistage groups, which is really the way I learned how to speak. You know, people ask me if I joined Toastmasters or went to a speaker school like I now offer. And I say, I didn't. I was just a very astute observer of what I liked and what I didn't like. And I find that has served me well in my 30-plus year careers and still is. Because as I'm watching these presenters, I'm thinking, oh, no, that doesn't work. This is a different platform. You know, it's the difference between doing a webinar and giving a live speech or doing a podcast. These are all different mediums. And so I developed a top 10 list of things to do in the virtual world when you're giving presentations. Things like, what's your frame? How should it be exposed? It's from your head to right about to your armpits. How far should you be away? You should be eye level with your camera. You should be standing during a presentation. I go on and on about how to use your slides and how to use your voice. And there were so many elements to it that I realized I had a whole separate presentation or part of it that we're now incorporating into speaker school and my coaching.
That's great. And are there the top three don'ts that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, one of the don'ts is people are, of course, use a lot of PowerPoint and slides. And one of the biggest faux pas that I saw is leaving slides up too long so you can't see the attendees and asking questions into the netherland because there's no faces. If you're going to put a slide up, make sure it's up for as long as people can see it, then take it down and get back to being interactive. And, you know, when I give my presentations virtually, I don't put people on mute. I want it to be as close to the real world. People have been very respectful. I mean, granted, if your dog or your kid runs in, I expect as adults you would know what to do. But I try to get people to simulate more of the real world without violating the virtual or the real world. And the slide thing is a big deal. People leave it up too much and all you're doing is like glazing its slides the whole time. The other thing that's a big don't is the way you speak normally does not play well in the virtual world. So if you're a quiet speaker or you're an introvert, you've got to magnify that to the point where it makes you uncomfortable because it's not about you. It's about the people who are listening to you. You need vocal variety, you need volume, and you need energy. And the other thing is the sitting. If you're giving a presentation, you're sitting down the whole time. You cannot get the same effect of energy as if you were standing. You know, now more than ever, Bill, people, you know, I've really narrowed my niche into storytelling and speaking and helping people present in the virtual world. And now more than ever, those skills are so important to leadership, to credibility, to getting the right message across. You know, a lot of people suck when they do it in the real world. Well, I hate to tell you what's happening in the virtual world. So, yeah, the don'ts are don't overuse slides and take them down in between just like you would. Make sure you're not sitting and use vocal variety.
Mickey, let's talk about an organization that we both love, Vistage Worldwide, and let's talk about a little bit about it, you know, the relevance of that type of a group for business owners today. You've had a lot of owners in your groups. You've talked to a lot of owners in their groups as a speaker. What would you say to a business owner about what your members have experienced as far as being part of Vistage and why it's so important to have a collective body of individuals that you can talk with, commiserate with in a confidential setting?
You know, Bill, you are so on point with that statement because during this time, I think never in the history of my time with Vistage, and I've been a Vistage speaker 25 years and a master chair for 18 years, have I seen the support that was needed and which was received. And so many of my members, by their own volition, will say, I don't know how other executives are getting through this by themselves. Vistage alone is, you know, for better decisions and better results. And when you have a collective group of people who care for each other, each one of them bringing their own intelligence and experience to the table, and you get yourselves in the middle of a business pandemic like this, every day they were sharing articles, they were speaking to each other, we were having meetups way more often than our once-a-month meeting. The support was incredible. And honestly, more often than not, they said, I'm so thankful I'm in Vistage. How do executives get through this without this peer advisory board?
Absolutely. And, you know, it seems like as I've been, they've shifted a lot of their executive summits, which, of course, they do all over the country, to virtual events. And I've been fortunate enough to moderate those events, 21 of them. And what's interesting is I see the content and I see the questions from the members. It's fascinating to see how freely they share information. It's almost like you've got a secret access to fantastic information that can help you that other business owners don't have as well. So the resources are tremendous.
Oh, it's 360. I mean, they're getting the resources from Vistage headquarters, worldwide organization. They're getting the resources from their own group members. They're getting it from the networks that they belong to. I mean, you know, there's 22,000 members around the world. There's the manufacturing network and the financial network. So they're getting it beyond 360. They're getting it from their coaching with me. They're getting it from their group. They're getting it from headquarters. They're getting it from all the different access points and platforms within their Vistage membership. Never more than ever have I seen the value proposition as much as it's been during this crisis.
And I'll also say one last thing, and that is that the information that they get when they do a survey of 22,000 global members, they get fast, reliable survey responses that make them a research giant when it comes to organizations like Wall Street Journal and Money Magazine or Inc. Magazine that are now saying Vistage is a huge area for research, especially during quick events like COVID-19.
Yeah, I have to give a lot of credit. I don't know, Bill, if you must have met Joe Galvin in your connection to Vistage.
Yes.
He's their chief research officer. And I have to say, since Joe's came on board, the level of research and information that has been shared worldwide and what they're doing, to your point, with the Inc. magazines and the Cranes and Fortune and all the magazines is incredible. The information gathered is so valuable. And Joe has just got a real passion for it and a real down-home, easy way of sharing it. You know, it's a lot of data, but boy, does he deliver it well.
That's very well put. Now let's talk about you, and you're not slowing down any. It sounds like you're going 100 miles an hour as usual. What projects are you working on besides all of the, you know, coaching, speaking, one woman shows, writing books? What's keeping you busy these days besides all of that?
I'm engaged and I'm building a new home and moved to Naples, so. On top of all that, all the other stresses of moving and doing all those, I mean, they're good things, but I'm trying to balance all of that. So in between a business coaching call, I'm on the phone with the gardener or the pool guy or the whatever. So I think the personal side of my life is taking up the other parts where the holes might be in terms of the business one. But, you know, really everything I'm doing, Bill, is kind of being reinvented again. Call it pivot, call it reinvent. So it's just taking those and adapting to where we are now. And that alone takes creativity and takes time. And it's really, I think I alluded to it, it just re-energized me. I was actually cutting back a lot, especially because of my move and building the home and my change of life and lifestyle. And I find I'm twice as involved instead of half because of what's happened. And I'm very inspired by it.
That's terrific. You know, I'm looking again at your website right now, which is Mickey Williams, MikkiWilliams.com, and in the store area, a tremendous amount of information from your book of Glamour and the Geek, which just communication tips. Basically, and
yeah.
CDs, DVDs, other people's books, a tremendous amount of information, and this you can get the Speaker's Day School 6 CD set for day one, day two. It's fantastic. A tremendous amount of information, which you wisely made available to anybody who visits your website at MikkiWilliams.com. Appreciate that about you. You never stop. You keep things going. Congratulations on your move to Naples. It's a beautiful part of the world. What are you enjoying about Naples, Florida?
Well, number one, I'm enjoying the weather because going from Chicago to Naples, I get to walk every day, which I love. I'm really enjoying the lifestyle. I'm enjoying, you know, that sun coming up every day just puts you in a really good mood. And because we're moving and building a house, I am excited about the newness of things. A lot of new in my life. And I was just thinking, Bill, as you were talking about my website, just as a little cute anecdote. you know, my members were recruiting. We don't always have spots in either of my two groups, and I have two openings in each, so we're talking about recruiting. And they always say lovingly, and I know because I'm well aware of this as you are, that my brand is outrageous. So they always say, well, I referred so-and-so to you. Don't worry, I've warned them before they go to the website.
No, Mickey, you definitely are an individual, one of a kind, and yes, you, like you say, be outrageous. What's the harm, right? It's a good way to live, and it's fantastic to have to hear you again and have you on the show and catch up with you. Now, are you still available for Vistage groups or for individuals for coaching or for virtual speeches, I guess, these days?
Yeah, I have openings in two of my Vistage groups, and they're in Chicago. I'm doing my first virtual speaker school, which got a great turnout, but we still have room, and that's May 28th through 30th. I'm really excited about that. And individual coaching all the time, keynote camp, making up people's speeches for them, Accountability Academy is a year-long program. So I kind of created something, Bill, for everyone. I just didn't want to turn anyone away based on price or based on time. And so all of the services have really just come out of, I need this, but I can't do that. I need this, but I can't do that. I mean, that's what an entrepreneur is, right? See a need, fill it. I've kind of mastered the art of that. So I have a lot of different things so everybody can get what they need based on time and budget.
So, listeners, are you sitting at home kind of getting a little bit tired of the same old stuff? Go to MickeyWilliams.com. Look for some new, fresh content. Learn how to be a better communicator and hire Mickey for her expertise in all the areas that she can bring. Mickey, thank you so much once again for joining me. It's been a real pleasure, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Bill. It's always delightful with you. We'll have to make it an annual, biannual, triple year, whatever it is, and not wait to pandemics to do it again.
Sounds like a deal. All right. Thanks so much. And
bye-bye.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure to have you. We really appreciate having you in the house today. It's been a great show and hope you learned a lot. And I look forward to the next time we speak next week.
Hey, everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.